I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to part two of Sean Hughes Under the Radar, the lovely Adam Hills. Adam, thanks again for coming in. So we talked about the last leg, but now I just want to talk about your, like, I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
But tell us about the beginnings of your life.
I had a very standard suburban Australian life growing up.
But you say that, but you were born with the disability, weren't you?
I was, but I never saw it as that. I didn't.
But
it's one of those weird things. I never saw myself as being disabled for a number of reasons. Firstly, the amount of my foot that I'm missing is so minimal that I can actually walk without the prosthetic.
Really?
Yeah. So I've got a stump. So it's a deformity. It wasn't an amputation. Okay, so let's go.
So when you were a kid, I guess you could have walked.
Yeah, let's go all the way back to when I was born. So when I was born, I came out with this foot that had an ankle joint. Now, okay, do you know what? I'm going to show you. I know this is weird. It's a podcast. Oh, do you get free time by stuff like this?
Yeah,
do you?
Okay. I can't watch hospital programs on telly.
Really?
Yeah. But thanks for the offer.
Nothing's been chopped off.
No, it's just honestly.
Wow. Okay.
And it's just a thing with me.
Sure.
Like, I just even. Like any, you know, 24 hours in A&E, I just go, no, I'm not watching any of that.
Right.
I just don't want to see people, you know, with the bone coming out of their elbow or anything like that.
Yeah,
just
okay.
Go, oh.
All right. I totally get that. No, that's all right. So the foot's like, it's got an ankle joint, it's got a little heel, it's about...
Oh, it's got a heel?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's about, I'm trying to work out, what is that, about 10 centimetres long. I can bear weight on it.
Right.
And it had two small toes on top of it, so it was a proper deformity.
But so why is the kind of prosthetic so big then?
Because I could walk on it for a while, but then as I grew, the height difference between my left and right foot got bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, you can see that's a good 15 centimetres.
See, because that's you've got a new one, which is it's interesting because now you can see how little has actually gone off.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because now I've got one of those blades.
Yeah.
So you can actually see where the stump ends.
But, look, I know you talked about it on telly as well, but it is really weird that that makes it a lot more, you know, people can see it much more easier now.
Yeah. But thanks to the Paralympics, people know what blades are.
Yeah.
And they kind of think they look a little bit cool, I think.
No, so, they do look cool, but I'm just thinking, like, you know, you get ignoramus as a kind of... You know, it's just that general thing that, especially kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but kids are nicer because kids will just ask. Kids will just blurt.
No, they just go, what's that?
Yeah. I remember sitting on a beach. I used to do this in stand-up, but laying on a beach once and hearing this kid come up from the water with his mum just going, and then a wave came, then Susie got knocked over, and then Susie got up, and then I got knocked over, and then I thought I saw a shark, but it wasn't a shark, and then that man's got one leg!
But so whereabouts in Australia?
So Sydney. I grew up in the southern suburbs of Sydney, which was very white.
Brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I've got a younger brother.
Okay.
A dad who worked for Qantas as cabin crew.
Never crash.
So he was away a lot. Dad was away
forever. That kind of comes with the airline job.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But for me, what I saw him do, because we would go on family holidays, he would travel around the world and talk on a microphone. That was what I thought my dad did. Because we'd go on, you know, we'd go on a flight and he might be working on the flight. And then we'd hear him, come on, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, but surely you'd know beforehand. You don't just pick a flight. You kind of go, Dad, are you on that flight?
Yeah.
You'd kind of ask.
No, we'd plan family holidays around whatever flights he was going to be on.
You mean free flights?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. But then, of course, we always had to go standby because that was...
Yeah.
We got the free, but it was standby. So every family holiday was sitting in the airport going, are we going to get on? Are we going to run?
And was it like business class or...
Standard
economy.
I remember when I was 14, he took me for my birthday. He had a trip to Tokyo, so he took me to Tokyo,
and I just got, 2 years.
Yeah, and I got bumped up to first class, and it was all the ginger ale I could drink, and I thought it was the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Well, I'll tell you the weird thing, not to butt into your story because it is your story, but I was going to Australia. I think it was with British Airways, and It was myself and Phil Jupiter, who were in Buzzcocks at the time, and Terry Alderton. And we went in to kind of check in, and the woman recognised me and Phil. And we were already in business, but they bumped us up to first. And we went, see you later, Terry. But then the weird thing, because, like, first class, you know, especially certain airlines, isn't any different to business, really. Yeah. But the thing is, you know, because it's a two-legged flight, the next people... We were back to business.
Oh, wow, right.
And you're kind of there in business going, this is a bit small, this, isn't it? The food isn't as good here, sitting beside Terry. But anyway, so that you're
in
Tokyo.
That never stops. Richard Ayoade told me he did a film with Ben Stiller, excuse me, and they were promoting it in the States. And at the end of the promotion, Ben Stiller said, oh, what are you, or Richard said, what flight are you on? And Ben said, well, I've got my private jet. And Richard went, oh, okay, oh, well, I'll see you. And Ben Stiller said, well, why don't you come with me on the jet? It'd be fine. So they got on the private jet and they're, you know, having food and everything. And then Richard said, well, this is absolutely lovely. And Ben Stiller went, yeah, the problem is you can never go back.
I know, that's the thing.
It's always another level of luxury.
Yeah, absolutely right, yeah.
So I had a really...
But you were saying you were going to Tokyo with your dad.
Yeah. So that was my childhood. My childhood was just, it was really lovely.
But so, right, 14 is an interesting age, right? So you're in school.
Yeah.
Especially when you go to a new school.
Yeah.
And 14-year-olds, like, they are spiteful and stuff. So you must have got slagged off and got nicknames and the like.
No, again, like...
But you would have been used to it yourself, so it wouldn't bother you. But I just know any 14-year-old, like, if you've got a spot in your head, you feel really subconscious, you know, self-conscious about the whole thing. So... Like, I'm sure they must have slagged you off a little bit.
Surprisingly little when I think back. And I think part of it was wearing long
trousers.
You were
trousers. Really good at fight.
No. I wish.
You're big alpha man.
No. Yeah, that's what it was. No, that's where the comedy came in, I think. No, I think, well, wearing long trousers, you can never really tell. So it didn't stand out.
Yeah.
Because the thing that kids will pick on is someone who stands out, not who's got a thing that makes them different, if it's visibly different. So half the year, they didn't know because I'd been in long trousers. I even remember one kid in summer, me going up to play cricket with them, and he went, oh, what happened to your foot? And I looked at him and he went, oh, sorry, I just forgot. I just haven't seen you in shorts for 6 months and I forgot about it. And what it was, and again, this was a really weirdly formative moment for me, is in... So I used to pull my socks up. So
you were kind of slightly hiding.
So I was hiding it. And then I realised that I was being mocked, not because of the prosthetic, but because I was the only kid with his socks pulled all the way up.
But that's what I mean. They look to anything.
Exactly. So then I just went, do you know what, bugger this, and just rolled my socks down. And then there was no more mocking. And there was, for some reason, it almost felt like the kids at school decided not to make fun of the disability.
But you're, like... a very friendly bloke as well, and I take it you were back then, so it'd be very hard to kind of, you know, mock you in general.
Maybe. I got pushed around, I got bullied, I got, you know, beaten up by some kids, I got mocked by some kids.
You don't
kids.
Have to tell people what happens off air in this studio. I'm trying to come across as me, a feminine side. You're, people know
Sean
I push you around.
Sean
yeah, thanks me. For coming in. And get out of here.
We joke, but he hits me. no, but I got bullied for other things. I got bullied for being a smart kid or for being a wimpy kid, but I didn't get bullied for the foot. That was really interesting, and I don't know why. I don't know whether... you'd have to ask the other kids why they didn't.
Well, luckily, they're all here. Jimmy O'Reilly, Jimmy Masterson, they're all, 25 of them. Get some seats in here.
All right, lads, why didn't you bully me about the foot?
We just liked you, Adam. So you went through school, then you went to university, I take it?
Yeah, I went to university. But the thing that was always there from a very early age, and I'm not entirely sure where it started, was comedy. And the love.
Well,
but
get on to that. Surely that wasn't there at 14.
Oh, it was well before 14.
Yeah, but like loving comedy, not thinking about doing it.
Oh, not thinking about doing it. No, that came later. But
so, what was the first thing you saw? Because mine was Richard Pryor.
I think the first thing I heard was on a family holiday when I was about 8 or 9.
Again, if we can just clarify, free.
It was a family holiday. Yeah, and because here's the interesting thing. Because it was free and we didn't all get to sit together. So my brother and I had two seats, and then about three rows back, my mum and dad sat together. So I reckon my brother maybe was 7 and I was 9, I think. And so I remember putting on the headphones and listening to the in-flight comedy channel. And the first person I heard was Victor Borger doing a routine about phonetic punctuation.
Yeah, that kind of stuff drives me nuts. I don't like that kind of stuff.
Why?
Well, it's clever rather than funny. Wouldn't you not agree?
Have you heard that particular routine?
No, maybe not, but just what you say, like when people do those things. It's like I don't find much musical comedy funny.
Right, okay.
You know, so that's where it's
fair enough. Kind of thing. Yeah. Which is one thing that Victor Borger does a lot of. But this particular one was about how punctuation in sentences should have noises so that you know when there's a comma coming up and you know where there's a question mark and a...
Yeah, again, very clever.
It is very clever, but then he does a whole bit where he actually reads a passage from a book with all of the bits of punctuation.
Yeah, I can imagine that being funny. Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. And it was the first time I'd really heard anything like that. And I remember kind of kneeling on my seat and yelling to my mum and dad three rows back, there's a man being funny on the radio! And they would just sit down, just Adam, just sit down and just keep listening. And I think because I didn't have them there to talk to...
By the way, wasn't your dad... Why wasn't he...
He wasn't working on that particular flight.
Phew.
Yeah.
Could have been a disaster. It's on autopilot, I'll be fine.
I have vivid memories of some flights where the crew were so overworked, it was such a full flight, that my dad would go, do you know what, I'm just going to get up and help. And he would then start helping out.
What, new civvies?
Yeah, and other
people
passengers...
people would be going, why are you giving me peanuts?
Yeah, yeah, and so other passengers would think, oh, well, I guess we're all helping out. He'd get up and start
That would be great, well. Actually.
But I remember listening to this, it was like a 40-minute, and it was, I don't even know who the other comedians were, probably Bill Cosby, maybe Connolly... I don't know.
Maybe me, Adam.
Oh, this would have been...
Yeah, I'm that old.
No,
I'm joking.
This is 70s, I'm talking.
Yeah, I started very young. No.
So I listened to this all the way to the end of the 40 minutes, and then it would rewind for 10 minutes.
And what, you were 14 now?
No, I would have been about 9 at this point.
Oh, wow. That is very...
Rewind, and then it would play again. And then it would rewind and play again. And I reckon I listened 3 or 4, maybe even 5 times. And I'd listen to the same routines.
9-year-olds can be quite annoying.
Same routines over and over. And I'd listen to the rhythm of them. And I really was fascinated by listening to it. And maybe it was because of that. But then after that holiday, my dad had Peter Sellers albums, Bill Cosby he would play. And
I hope he's thrown that one out.
I mean, it's amazing to think back that...
I saw...
So did I. Where did you see him?
In San Francisco.
Right. When?
About less than 10 years ago.
Okay.
Quite old. But it was and it's one of those casino function rooms.
Right.
He was good. He wasn't great. And but, you know, you just at that time had respect for him. And it was just amazing to see him. Where did you see him?
I saw him in Montreal, probably around about the same time, maybe... Oh, a bit less. Maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
And was he doing a full show?
Yes, he was, yeah. And I had to... I only watched about 25 minutes because I was doing my own show.
He's done what to women? I'm out of here.
Well, there's another interesting thing. He did this whole routine about getting annoyed at his wife and women, and do women do this and they say this, and and it was almost like manpower. And I watched half an hour of that, and then I had to go and do my own show. And then my wife had stayed to watch the show, and I said, what was it, you know, what was the rest of the show like? She said, he's got some women issues.
Really?
All he did was just degrade women for an hour and
but
a half.
But it's a really weird thing because, like, when I was a kid, the Cosby Show was...
Oh, man.
You know, and it was, like, so clean, you know?
Yes.
You just go, oh, you know, family morals and all that.
Yeah.
Like, that and Family Ties I used to love.
Well, that's what we used to listen to on holidays. We used to put in a cassette, a Bill Cosby cassette. The whole family would listen to that. So we did have a, you know, again, even at the age of 9 or 10, we would listen to stand-up in the car.
Right.
So that's where I first...
So the whole family enjoyed it?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I would start doing impersonations of Bill Cosby, either to my parents.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good, actually, that one. Seriously.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, yeah. So I would really listen to the routines, and I would kind of impersonate them. And then I guess from that was Billy Connolly, and then Robin Williams, I think, was the one that opened
See,
my
that's
eyes
that's another
to.
One I don't get.
Really?
I know.
Right.
Never laughed once.
But, I mean, that's comedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like that, and that's why it's really interesting when...
Did you notice, I didn't go, he's not funny, I just went, I didn't get him.
Yes.
People who don't really are in comedy, they just go, he's shit. I would never say that. I know how talented he is, I just go, leaves me cold.
Does that happen with music? Do people, I mean, there are bands that people don't like.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say Coldplay, just because that's one that you hear people go,
it's easy
Coldplay.
Though, yeah.
But do they? No one ever says Coldplay is shit. They always go, I hate Coldplay.
Yeah.
But when it comes to comedy,
yeah, you're right. Actually,
comedy, they go, well, that guy's shit.
Yeah.
Because, and maybe it's because the alternative is you don't get it.
I know.
And no one wants to think, I don't get it.
Yeah, you don't go, I didn't get that Coldplay song.
Yeah.
They must be shit.
So, yeah, I mean, there's comedians I don't.
Yeah, of course,
get.
Yeah.
There's...
Unlike me, you won't tell them to the face. But,
I remember on that, I remember being in, well, you know Barry Murphy, an
yeah,
Irish
yeah,
comedian.
He's great.
The first time I met him, he's a lovely man for people listening, and we were in...
He's a drunkard.
Oh, he's definitely a drunkard. We were in Galway, and
right.
There was a comedy festival there,
yeah.
And a few of us had gone out to dinner before the show, and we'd gone to McDonough's fish restaurant, and there was a blackout, all the electricity went out, and they came out and said, listen... we can still use the grill, we can still use the gas, we can give you candles, we can still cook you some stuff, we just can't cook you everything. And we had this really lovely meal, a whole bunch of us, including Barry, I'd never met him before, chat. We went off and did the gig together. I think Barry emceed and I did a spot. And then afterwards we went out for a drink and he said, you had a good show tonight. I said, oh, thank you. He said, I really enjoyed your act. I said, thank you. And he said, and I'm glad I enjoyed your act, because if you had died, I'd have never spoken to you again. But I quite enjoyed the chat over dinner, so I was hoping you were going to be good.
Yeah, that's exactly, you got him.
That's exactly
on.
That comedic thing.
Yeah.
You know.
No, Barry's great. Actually, I saw him, well, I think you were there as well, because I did a couple of the Irish festivals this year, and Barry was on, and he was tremendous, really funny. And he's quitting.
Is he?
Mm.
He is one of those people that more people should know about. Like, it's just, it almost, it's a shame that
yeah,
people...
Yeah, but I think he's not that bothered about
no,
that.
No, he's totally not that
so
bothered about it, I don't think.
You don't worry about it either.
No,
that's what I'm saying.
Point.
I'm saying,
no,
I'm not saying you don't.
Point.
I'm just saying,
yeah.
Don't worry about
it. I shouldn't
Barry.
Worry about it, because he's not worried, yeah.
But so, let's get back to your life.
Right. So, pretty easy childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely suburban upbringing.
We're already at 14, stop going back.
Loved comedy.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what's right. Brought us up to 14. Studied hard at school.
This is not the interview for you to get into university. I'm not.
I don't know.
I'm not the admissions officer going, yes, tell us a bit more about yourself. Did you study hard? So you went to university.
Played a lot of tennis. There you go. That's
oh,
what I did.
God,
I played an enormous
that.
Amount of
you
tennis.
You still play tennis,
I,
don't
I haven't played lately, but I played...
Because you don't like the cold.
No, I just need someone to play against, actually.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm not the person.
Really?
I've got no... I guess I'm slightly dyslexic in general, but I've definitely got physical dyslexia.
Right, OK.
You know, where I just go, is that... Do I hit it with my left? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
terrible at sport.
Well, see, I think that was one thing that my parents also did quite... For me, when I was quite young, was they enrolled me in a gymnastics class when I was probably about 5 or 6. And because... Actually, again, if you go back... So when I was born, this is what I was going to say to you before. When I was born, the initial response from the surgeons was, we don't know what... that is below his knee, maybe we should chop it off.
Right.
And the first thought was amputate. And they called in a specialist who came in and looked and said, no, I think that's an ankle joint. And I think if you leave it, he's going to have a better chance of walking without the prosthetic, and it's going to make him steadier with the prosthetic, and you should leave it. And I saw that guy. He's now in his 80s. And
but I take it was your dad or mum that told you the story, not you, like this amazing memory from birth.
I mean, I was trying to speak
up. I'm listening.
Well, my dad and mum and now this guy will all, whenever I see him, will remind me and tell me the story. And he still says it's one of his proudest moments. Because
brilliant.
He comes along and he watches me on stage. And he's got a son who was born 2 days after me. And so, also called Adam. And so he, for some reason, he always compares his son to me.
Now, this is getting spooky. Stop it.
It is a bit weird.
But actually, no, because when you said that little bit there, it reminded me of, you know, Dr. Feelgood when he was given that terminal cancer.
No, but...
That's the right name, isn't it? Dr. Feelgood? It's Wilco Johnson.
Oh, right, OK.
Yeah.
No, I
didn't,
yeah.
But, and he was, he did a tour to just go say goodbye to everyone. And they gave him no hope. And this guy, this... specialist in cancer kind of was watching it and went, no, we can sort this out, and he's still alive now.
Wow, really?
So the exact same thing, like, you know, just... But then there's a sadness to that as well, that there's not enough of those people out there.
Yeah.
You know, like bog standard kind of. You know, I don't want to be slagging off Docris, but you know, when there's guys who actually have a vision.
Well, yeah, I mean, even as I got older, you know, the first specialist that my mum took me to then when I was, you know, 1 or 2 years old, must have been younger, one, said he'll never walk. Maybe a few months old, this specialist said he'll never walk, so just get used to that. You may as well buy him a wheelchair now. And mum went home, was devastated. And then, I don't know who it was she was talking to, but someone said, no, there's this other specialist, go and see this guy. Mm. And she went and saw this other guy, and he went, oh, that's bollocks, of course he's going to walk, he'll be fine. But yeah. But what this guy said is, from an early age, enrol him in something sporting, something like gymnastics, teach him coordination. But
bizarrely, I went to see that boxing film recently, you know, the true story one about Vaz, who basically, he won a couple of world championships and then had a car crash.
Right.
Had to get one of those halos where, you know, his neck was broken.
Yeah.
And the doctor said, you'll never walk again. And he pretty much started training straight away and won 2 world championships.
Wow.
Great film, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's a good... I'd like to think, I might be wrong, but I think I took that from a very early age, which is...
That's what I mean. Like, rather than even the doctor being brilliant,
yeah,
you were a survivor straight away.
Yeah, you can do... You know, if I really want to do something and someone tells me I can't, then that just gives me more reason to do it. And in fact, even...
Is that how you got recommissioned for the last leg?
I remember, do you know what? I remember early on when I started doing comedy, because again, I was this really sheltered 19-year-old from the suburbs.
You started at 19?
Yeah, so I started doing stand-up at 19 when I was at university. And at that point, I mean, now...
We're all shit when we started.
Yeah. But now there's lots of teenagers that are doing comedy.
Yeah.
But back then, I was the youngest, just the youngest.
But do you think there's more of a young audience now, though?
Oh, so definitely. I think the internet, I think YouTube,
yeah,
you know, people are more aware of stand-up and they'll get into it at a younger age. But I had no life experience whatsoever. I had a really sheltered upbringing. And I remember on about the third or fourth night, the act before me had just been booed off stage. There was a lot of stag nights in...
So this was not like a university gig, it was a club?
No, this was the Sydney Comedy Store, yeah.
Okay.
And it was always stag nights.
And you were 19?
Yeah. And I remember the manager looking at me going, oh, you would have... Ingrid.
Right, yeah.
Ingrid going, oh, God, look at Adam having kittens in the corner. You're right over there. And at that moment I thought, do you know what, screw you. I know you think I'm this little kid from the suburbs who's going to crumble on stage, but no, I'm going to fucking show you. And I went out there and, like, somehow, bravado, I don't know, or bullshit, really, got my way through it.
Brilliant.
And then...
Well, that wasn't your first gig, that was about the fourth.
That wasn't my first gig, but it was one of my... It would have been within the first 6 months.
But did you... Because I think it's healthy. In the first, like, couple of months, did you die on stage?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
See, that's when you know you're going to be a comic for life, because a lot of people, when that happens, you go... Like, I was in a double act, right?
Right.
When I started off. And we moved over to London. We had 6 gigs booked. The first 3 went brilliant, even though we were rubbish. I have to point that out.
Right.
Fourth gig, genres, died on our ass. And, you know, you kind of go... When you're in a double act, it's actually quite nice, because you kind of go, well, we got each other, like, you know, yeah, support. Yeah. And the next morning, woke up, you know, and he just goes, oh, I just got a phone call, my sister's ill. I have to go back to Ireland, and I never saw him ever again.
Really?
And this is what I'm saying, like, you know, he couldn't deal with the rejection. And comics have to deal with a lot of rejection.
I think whether or not, if you still want to do comedy after dying, then you're in the right job.
Yeah.
But you've got to die early to have that tested, because it feels worse than anyone could ever imagine at the time. And then the next morning you get up and the rest of the world is still going on, and...
I know, it's like when I started doing the comedy store first, it was, you know, you didn't go well when you go into the dressing room and everyone's just really quiet.
Do you know, I read a book of letters. It was letters from Van Gogh,
right,
to his brother. And those were what really made him famous, the letters when they were published after his death and people...
Well, I think the paintings, maybe.
No, it wasn't, though, because he didn't sell a painting while he was alive.
I know that, yeah.
Sorry. I meant the letters... sparked interest in the paintings,
okay.
Yeah. And he talked about, there was one letter where he said, I, you know, over the past week I've done 50 sketches of the same tree just to get it right. And I was reading that on a plane thinking, I wish there was something in my life that I was that obsessed about, that I would really... Oh. And then I was sitting there looking out the window and thought of a joke and pulled out my notebook and scribbled it down and went, oh, there is. I've just done it. I'm sitting on a plane and I'm thinking of jokes.
But that's the thing, like, because we'll wrap it up in a sec, but now that you're doing a lot of television, like, I know your first love is stand-up.
Mm.
Do you find you're going to do less stand-up then?
a little... I'm trying to balance it in that I can't do as much stand-up as I was doing.
You still love it, though?
I still love it. I still absolutely love it. The travel's killing me a little bit.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah. I mean, even, you know, last night... we did the last leg on Saturday night, live. And as you say, you start work at 12:30 in the morning, in the afternoon. You finish, you leave the studio at 1.
And you're no prima donna either, so you won't make demands on people. Get me a sandwich now. No, I've only got one leg. Did you play that card at all? Not in the last leg, but in your life.
No, that was the other thing. So growing up, you know, my parents were told to treat me like any other normal kid. If we were playing cricket and I tripped over and they go, "I'll give him another go," I'd go, "No, I'm out."
Yeah, but that's you doing that. I can imagine if you were bowled when you were a kid and your parents going, you know, "Adam, I've only got one leg, Mum. Just don't stop shouting at me."
No, I never. I was really you know, I wanted to do what the other kids could do. And that's why I think that's why I never talked about it in stand-up for so long, because I didn't want to...
Now you can't stop!
No, you're right. I really have to pull back on it now. People get very annoyed when I talk about it now.
No, but it is a weird thing, because you're still building new audiences because of television.
Yeah.
And if you don't mention it, then they go, "When did you mention the bloody that?"
Exactly right. So after the after the 2012 Paralympics, the next year I did a tour, and I found... It was like the audience had discovered an album that I'd released 10 years earlier. It was like that. So they were coming along to the show waiting for me to do the material about my foot.
Yeah.
And that particular show, I wasn't talking about it. So I had to find a spot to slot it in to keep everyone happy. So they go, "Right, good, that's out of the way. That's the bit, that's the bit we kind of came."
Because you must be bored. That's what I mean, bored talking about it, bored when. And you said you weren't when in interviews when people bring it up and stuff. I know it's like one of the defining moments of your body, not your life.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like I was telling you about, you know, my big, again, problem with... Because I find British people very generous of heart.
Yeah.
And but with disability, they still look to the disability rather than to the brain. And I find that just needs to be retrained in people.
Well, the reason I started talking about it was genuine, and it's become a routine now, but it was after September 11, it was 3 days after, I went through Heathrow Airport. And my foot would always set off the metal detectors. And I fully expected them to go, "Right, we need you to take it off. We need to have it." And I would have happily done that at that point. But I remember the guy getting really freaked out when he was, "Right, what's going on?" And I said, "It's a prosthetic." And he went, "Oh, sorry, mate, go for it. Just go through."
Yeah.
And, you know, on stage, I follow with the line. He had a look in his face that basically said, "I don't care if the plane goes down. I don't want to offend a spastic. Just go, just go." But that line, that was exactly the reason that I wanted to start talking about it on stage, because I just thought, this is ridiculous. Like, we've just had what's happened in America, the Twin Towers, and you're too scared to actually check a prosthetic.
And were you actually carrying a bomb that day?
No, thankfully. Oh, right. No. I've had it swabbed. They swab every now and again for explosives around the top. And, you know, I'm very tempted to go, "Listen, how do you think I lost it?" but it was that thing. It was that realisation that this guy is too scared to actually do his job properly that made me go, "Right, I want to talk about this now. I've got a reason to talk about it. I want people to feel okay and just know to not get freaked out by it." And weirdly, that's now carried on to the Paralympics and beyond. And...
Well, listen, madam, there's the lost years, as we call them, the middle years, which we haven't got time to talk about. But it's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Oh, it's lovely.
One of my favourite guests of the whole series.
Oh, Sean.
So,
well, do you know what? I remember being your support act.
Don't rub it in.
Which theatre was it in Adelaide? Her Majesty's Theatre, maybe in Adelaide. Right. This would have been in 94, 95. And then you and I playing table tennis for a long time after that.
Yeah, I bet you won.
No, I can't remember.
Well, a guy who plays tennis doesn't win the table tennis. Listen, you've been listening to Adam Hills Part 2. This has been Sean Hughes with Under the Radar. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.